Hello and welcome back to the Mission Darts podcast, episode 34, the least used double on the dartboard, Matt, I believe. Double 17.
Double 34. How are you? Double 34.
That's a new one, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, same sort of scenario. I'm going to sit here and go, oh, I'm so busy, but I love it. It's a great time to be involved in darts. There's so much going on, so much changing all the time in the world and in the sport. And, you know, I've been involved in the sport now pretty much my entire life, and I can say there's probably never been a more exciting time to be involved in darts than now. Mm. You know, you look at the developments of social media platforms, TikTok, YouTube, podcasts, things like that going through the roof. And something we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show as well, the prize money changes, how that's going to affect people's lives and how this is going to affect people within the rankings as well and what it means for people, more professional players, which is ultimately what we wanted. We're going to move the boundary now below the 64. But we'll get into all the serious stuff in a bit. I've actually got something for you, Andy, that I'm going to start off with. And I was having a little scowl through today, and I came across a dart nickname generator.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to do it. Right. So what you got to do, enter your first name, Andy, your second name, Cornwall, generate nickname. Your nickname is Andy the Dartagan Cornwall.
The Dart again?
The Dartagan.
The Dartagan.
You're the Dartagan.
It's a really good generator, this, isn't it? I don't think any of the professional players have been on there and gone, oh, yeah, that's really good.
That's what mine says.
Yeah, see what yours says. I'll try and get my headphone in right while you're doing it.
I'm the Bullseye Bandit.
Okay, that's actually not that bad, is it, really?
Sure, give me another name. Let's just go with another name. Have we got a name of one of our listeners, maybe?
Let's go with Christian Hayes.
Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes is Casanova.
I'm sure he'd be delighted.
So we see what Phil Taylor is. Phil Taylor. Let's go Phil Taylor. Is Casanova as well.
What's happened? Casanova. Yeah, what's happened? It's broken. It's only got four names in it, and we've used them all. Let's do another one.
Let's go foreign name. Mike the Decker.
Oh, it's going to struggle with that, I think. Is it
the
real
Trailblazer?
The Trailblazer. Well,
I know one. I'm going to put in Battery Liquor. Madhouse.
Richie. Maybe Richie's a battery liquor. Anyway, welcome to the podcast, everyone. If this is the first darts podcast you've listened to, those opening 3 minutes have probably got you wondering what on earth you've done turning onto this channel. But welcome. Welcome, everybody. And my big news is, Matt, the spam's gone. My spam's gone. I had it Sunday morning.
Spamless.
Spamless.
Eagle eye.
Eagle eye, yeah. Eagle eye. The spam got eaten Sunday morning after too many Guinnesses on Saturday, so it's going to have to be replaced. It was very enjoyed. Bit of brown sauce, fried in the pan. It was delicious, and it sorted my hangover out well and truly. So that's how my weekend went.
Just to get things straight, right? You said, if you just turned in, first 3 minutes, you're wondering what on earth this darts podcast is, and then you decided to try and save it and pull it back to topic with spam.
Yeah, absolutely. Our American listeners, they love spam.
Yeah,
we love. So welcome to you guys over there. Thank you all for listening. And I've pulled it back with spam, which is amazing. But yeah, now I've got a few darts topics as well. I've got a few. Yeah. Now, first of all, next week's podcast's a biggie, Matt. Never been done before. It's never been done. I'm going to be doing the podcast from Cyprus. And I just hope the Wi-Fi is okay, because we know we've had our problems in the past. Matt's going to pull me in on this amazing piece of software we use. I'm going to be in Cyprus. There's a two-hour time difference, so he'll probably pull me in and I won't be there, or I'll be sat there and he well, something crazy is going to happen. We know that. But if all goes well, I'll be doing the podcast next week. I'm not doing it just in a pair of shorts, Matt. I'm not doing it in my Speedos, right? So don't be scared, anybody there. I'll be doing the podcast from Cyprus next week. So that's exciting and made me think, where's your favourite place to go on holiday, Matt?
Skegness.
Is that your all-time favourite?
That or Blackpool.
Is that going to be better than Vegas and WrestleMania?
WrestleMania is not a holiday. WrestleMania is an event.
It's a holiday, Matthew. You're not working. You're going there to have fun. So that's going to be, you're going to come back from there. Well, I'm not sure you're going to get through customs with all the memorabilia. That's what I'm worried about. It's like, we're really sorry. Matt's still in America because they wouldn't let him back with five suitcases. He went out with one, came home with five, and they went, Mr. Edgar, I think we need to have a word. I go to Cyprus and then you go to WrestleMania. It's a pretty hectic April, really, isn't it? And not a lot of darts on anyway. So good time for us both to go. Premier League's on, but there's nothing other than that, is there?
I'm home for 2 days in the whole of the month.
In the whole of April.
I'm on commentary. I'm in Vegas. We're doing Rate My Hockey Series 4. I'm at home for 2 days. And one of those days is me getting back at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and leaving the next day at 9 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, the missus isn't overly pleased, but some people may actually think that's a great thing, seeing less of me at home, you know. So
absence makes the heart grow fonder. That's what they say, Matt. You know.
Exactly that. And do you know what? When you
get home.
Do you know what? I'm going to skip over this one quite quickly because I know you're very much on the fence of her side, because she's expecting me, certainly after listening to the podcast, and because I'm not home for very long, she's expecting a bit of Chateaubriand on one of the nights, Andy. Now,
I knew that was coming.
Now, I've only done this once. You know I've only experienced the Chateau once, and I don't fancy paying 80 quid for it.
Why? What's 80 quid for a man of your means?
You know I was on the Chateau when I was on full on expenses. On Chateau, yeah.
Oh, poor Jody. I don't know. Maybe she'll get the Chateaubriand.
And she'll want a drink with it as well. You know, she'll want drinks on top. And
yeah, well, what's it going to cost you, Matt? Chateaubriand, nice glass of wine or whatever she likes, and hotel for the night. It's a couple hundred quid.
Right. Go
on.
You go out for a meal. Our American listeners are going to hate me, by the way. You go out for a meal. The bill comes. Do you pay the bill? Or do you pay the bill plus tip?
So it depends whether it's been good or not. So if I've had an okay meal and the food was decent, but the service was kind of like, oh, I need a drink. Can I get a drink, please? And over they come, and then, oh, I'm desperate for a dessert. Why has nobody been? Can I order a dessert? If it's like that, there's no tip. They're not getting a tip because they've not earned it. Okay, they've done the minimum. If every time my glass is about to be empty, the guy's, are you okay? Do you want anything else? Oh, you know, but without being, I hate it when they're in your face, Matt. I don't want that. Are you okay? Do you want another drink? Are you okay? Oh yeah, I'd love another glass of wine. Brilliant. Okay. The minute I've finished my main course, okay, if I take the plates, yeah, that'd be great, mate. That'd be great. Do you want a few minutes or shall I bring you the dessert menu? Oh, a few minutes would be great, mate. Thank you. Yeah, perfect. If I get that level of service, I'm absolutely leaving a tip. Minimum 10%, up to 20% if it's unbelievable.
Okay.
Now, I've been to America quite a few times and it's expected everywhere there. Now, when people say, oh, yeah, but expected. Yeah, but their level of service is amazing. So you go and have a coffee and an egg and chips, the service will be incredible in America. It's like it's a different industry to what we are here. I think here, waiting on and it's seen as a something you do when you want a few bit of cash when you're at college or you know, you want a second job, you do a bit of this. Whereas there, it's seen as, I can make a living at this if I'm good at this. If I'm good at waiting on, you know, I'm going to get some serious tips. I'm going to, and so it is expected there, but the level of service is so much better. So kudos to the guys over there.
I have a different stance on this. And okay. I get that. And American listeners are probably going to say that they get taxed on tips and things like that, or, you know, tips are expected. It's part of the culture, things like that. Right. Well, I've got a few stances on this. I was frowned upon a little bit when I was in Philadelphia because I didn't tip. And I tipped a few times, like you say, but it's become such an expectation there that they don't even try in places. We had a taxi driver who was on the phone throughout our trip. And at the end of it, we looked at me gone off when I just paid him the fare. And I'm like, mate, you've been on the phone the whole time.
That's a bit different.
Guy served me my programs. I went to get WrestleMania programs. And all he's done is get WrestleMania programs out of a box, put it on, put the thing on, and it goes, how much do you want to tip? Not do I want to tip, how much do I want to tip? Yeah. Custom, zero. You didn't pass me a program. Like, what?
Yeah, that's fair enough. But...
And then my brother sort of understands that culture a lot more. He's a little bit more like you, a bit more posh, a bit more fancy. And he said he would not tip anywhere where he hasn't sat down for service. Like, if he goes to a burger van and he gets a burger, no tip, you know. But if I'm sat down to be served, then he will. Now, this is where the controversy comes in. I will pay whatever it is. If you want £30 for this burger, tell me it's 30 quid, I'll give you 30 quid. If really you want £33, tell me it's £33. Don't tell me it's £30 and then, oh, give us an extra three. You know, no, it's 30 quid. That's what I'm going to give you. That's what you asked for. That's what the deal is. You give me the burger, it's 30 quid, done. And as part of that, the burger didn't cost you 30 quid. The process didn't cost you 30 quid. I'm paying for the service within it. Why am I paying for service twice? Because I'm paying for service within 30 quid. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting one. Obviously not very darts related, but it's interesting to get different people's views on tips.
Yeah, and I think this one might scare you or shock you or I don't know. But if you go to a fancy restaurant, I know you've been to one or two, but they'll add the tip on as a service charge.
And still and ask.
To pay it. But, and it still can ask. Be as much as... Yeah, and it can be as much as so your bill might already be 200 quid, and then they're asking for 20% on top service charge. It just comes on your bill. It's not like would you like to leave a tip? Oh, your bill's 200 quid, and we want another 40 quid service charge. Now I hate that, and I've dined at some really expensive, really fancy restaurants, and I hate that. If I want to leave you 100 quid, I'll leave you 100 quid. And I have done that. I've been somewhere and left 100 quid tip, albeit party of four. I've had an unbelievable experience, best night of my life, and I've left 100 quid, right? And gone, and I've asked them first, is this money going to you or is the manager having it? No, it goes, right, I'm leaving 100 quid because you've been unbelievable, the best service I've ever had. If that had come on the bill already, I'm asking them to take it off, Matt. And I have done that. I'm like, can you take that off? You take that service charge off and I'll leave what I think is right. Don't put it on like automatically. Like you say, include it in the prices, but don't put on an automatic service. I hate that. I hate that. So, yeah, like you say.
You know what? I can go with another hate here. And one of my pet hates is what you've kind of said. Now, again, I get some people say it's a disclaimer. But I think it's a disclaimer for low-end eateries at times. When you know when you get a mouthful of food and they go, is everything all right for you? And you're like...
That's bad service. That's bad service.
Because when I watched a Gordon Ramsay show and he says, be seen. You don't need to be heard and you don't need to disturb. He says, be there. Right. He goes, watch. He goes, if someone's looking at their food and they're lifting it up and laughing around with it, there's something wrong. If they're sat there scoffing the whole thing, looking at having a great time, don't go interrupt the conversation or the meal. Just, is everything all right?
That's where it is a skill. That's where it's a skill, Matt. And certainly when you go continental Europe and America, they've mastered it. They've mastered the art of looking after eight tables and knowing when anybody needs me there And when, no, I need to leave them alone. They're perfectly fine. Let me leave them alone. They don't want interrupted. It's a skill, that. It is a skill. And that deserves a tip. But, yeah, just chucking a plate on the table and going, oh, I expect 20% at the end. No, not doing it. Not doing it.
Have you had that one yet where you go to a restaurant, right, and you're eating it, and then someone comes along, is everything all right with your meal? Yeah. Then the manager walks past and they're not sure that you've been told asked yet. So they ask you as well. They go, everything all right with your meal? Yes, still fine. Yeah. And then someone else comes by.
Yeah.
Like, yes, bugger off. Like, let me eat my dinner. Yeah. Like,
it's a skill. It is a skill. And no doubt on our next trip, we will come across good, bad, and indifferent service. We really will. But we won't get any spam. So I've got another question for you. About your darts history, really, because, and this is going back a couple of weeks. I've been watching a fair bit of darts lately, even though there's not been that much on, but Euros, Menzies miscounted against Mike Dedeker. That was when there was all the theatrics and all. And to be honest, I'm getting a bit sick of that. I'm not going to have a rant about that today, but it is doing my head in a bit with Menzies because he's doing it on Pro Tours now. And I'm like, for God's sake, like, just calm yourself. Anyway, and I think it affects him as much as anybody else. Anyway, he did a really bad miscount and he it cost him. Have you ever miscounted in a game that's really mattered? Like, I'm sure you must have miscounted. We've all miscounted for whatever reason. But have you ever done it, like, in a decider or you think, oh, my God? Because famously, we've seen Phil Taylor, Gary Anderson, famously hit a checkout and then the marker's gone 110 scored. And they've gone, I thought I've won the leg.
I just thought
you played a lot longer than me. Did you ever do it and go, oh, Matt, you absolute muppet. You'd left 34, not 32. Or you've never checked out a game and then the marker's gone, you haven't checked out, mate.
I don't think it's ever happened. I tell you what has happened to me once. It was in Leverkusen about 2018. I was playing on stage against Christoph Ratajski, and I was 5-4 down. Ratajski was sat on tops to win the match. I wanted a double 16 to make it 5-5, and I think I would have had the darts in the last leg. I've hit the double 16, and the dart has hit the double 16 segment and just bounced off it as if it was concrete.
Oh.
And you can see the clear indentation. When you slow it down, the dart was clearly in.
Yeah.
In by one, and it just goes, bong, bounces off. And I'm just like, as if it hit a wire.
You didn't hit it again with your other dart, or did you have any darts left?
Well, the full story is he then missed tops, and then I hit double 16 next shot. But yeah.
Okay.
I needed a bit of fortune in missing the tops. But yeah. Weird, isn't it? Like, and it just, like, say, just hit the segment and come off, like, as if it just hit a wall. Like,
yeah, you get hard spots. You do get hard spots.
Kurt Bevins were the referee. And I was like, that was in, weren't it? And he goes, yeah, clearly. And then I looked at the board and it was marked. And then Paul Nicholson on commentary is like, you can clearly see it was in. There's a clear indentation where it's hit. It's just not stayed in. It has to go in the board. Like, so soft tip it counted, but
it would. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that, didn't we? Oh, that's a bit gutting then, isn't it? So while we are on darts topics, I've got an interesting one, Matt. Now, you know, golf gets brought up a lot in this podcast because that's my pastime now. And I've observed something in the last few months. So in golf, particularly ladies' golf, the Asian players are completely dominating. So I think something like out of the top 20 female golfers in the world, 15 are from Asia. I'm watching the men's at the weekend, and there's some men, Asian players, doing really, really well. And then when you think about it, there's a lot more people in Asia than there is in Europe, etc. So it makes sense if they take onto a sport. So then I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute. Asian players have been playing darts for a long time. When I had my shop, the amount of Asian player darts that were coming out, soft tip, steel tip, a lot of premium brands, you know, Monster and L Style and all these sort of... Why are there no Asian players in the men's top 32 PDC? Why is it?
I think the answer is very simple to that. Because they live on the other side of the world to where most PDC tournaments are played. You know, for them to come over to...
So did Damon Hetter.
Yeah, but they're two cases out of how many Australian players. And John Part from Canada used to travel over and back all the time. And if you're going to relocate, if you're going to go, right, I'm going to move from Asia, I'm going to relocate to England, take darts seriously, you've got no guarantee you can get anything. Even if you get to the Pro Tour,
So it's a big step. But surely somebody must have come along in that area and everybody's gone, good God, you're unbelievable. You're better than anything we've ever seen. You need to go to England.
Yeah, but and also thinking about it, when you look at those examples like Kyle Anderson didn't come over to and relocate to the UK. He came over to the UK. He was put up in a house. He had a guaranteed salary. Same thing when Whitlock, he came over after being on the BDO. He had things in place. Same thing with Damon Hetter. So I think it would be a case of, if it happens, it will only happen because there's a sponsor or backer involved that's going to guarantee him a house and a salary. And then what they earn until that happens,
imagine if there was an Asian superstar that suddenly came over, made it in the top 20 in the world on the TV. Imagine what would happen to darts in that billions of people watching it. It would be unbelievable for the sport. And I'm sure this leads us very nicely onto the money. And I'm sure Barry would love that to happen. I'm sure he'd be thinking, right, how do we get into Asia, boys? Because if we get into Asia, this sport explodes.
And America isn't
doing already.
And America. Darts is an infant. Look at darts in general. It's an infant.
Yeah, the reasons I've heard in the past for America and Canada are because they're so vast, it's so spread out. So you get one good player in Florida, one good player in Texas, one good player in Philadelphia, but they're all 15 hours away from each other. So that's kind of, whereas in this country, a lot nearer together. But it does lead us nicely onto the money, Matt. I can't believe the numbers that have been announced. I know you've done a little video on it, but £1 million? Is that right? To the winner of the Worlds?
Winner of the Worlds, yeah.
£1 million?
I like the drop down as well. Like everyone's focusing on the million and seeing it's a negative, saying it's not spread, but it actually is. So I did the numbers, didn't I? And it was something like the world number 64 now will get paid the same as the world 46. So that means anyone in the top 64 should be a professional. The world number 32 will get paid just outside the top 16. The top 16 position will now get paid like a Premier League player. So Everyone's going to benefit from this, and then the people in the bottom 64 will still benefit as well. So everyone's going to benefit from it in some way, and now we're at a situation we should have 64 professional players. If you are in the top 64 and you are not a professional player, seek financial help, because the problem is you, not the system.
Yeah, that's a very fair way of looking at it, and maybe something that you and I have kind of advocated for a while, really, that these guys shouldn't have to be still delivering post or washing windows, or what, there should be professional players in the sport. I think it's very, very interesting as to what's going to happen. My only worry is if the system remains the same, do we get another Mike Smith? Do we get somebody wins the world title and then 2 years later drops out of the 16?
We're going to get big changes in the rankings because the prize money difference, when we're talking 30, 40%, in some cases nearly 100% in the positions, we're going to see for a year or two, the players that are now in form jump the rankings, and the players that are struggling drop down much, much quicker.
Okay. So here's my take, and this is what I think should happen. I'm interested in your take on this. I think right now, we don't have a, fingers in the air, majors in darts. We talk about the World Championship. We talk about the World Max players probably being the top two. I think we need five. I think we need five major tournaments that are the five major tournaments that all have very similar prize money. and you're aiming to get in those five, and that's how you earn the big bucks that keeps you in the ranking positions. By having one tournament that's so much more money than all the rest, almost feels like, if I don't have a good world championship, I'm going to drop 20 places. And that's too harsh.
The problem you've got with that is having the same payout for the events. They're not all the same grade. They've not all got the same entries. The Grand Slam's got 48 players. The World Match Play's got 32. The UK Open's got 160. The Players' Championship Finals has got 64. So it becomes very hard to have like a continuity of prize payout across that sort of system or series, because you've ultimately got different gradings. Like I say, the UK Open's not as big as winning the match play. And, you know, that's represented in the prize pool as well. Now, if we were to ask a different question, which tournament is the hardest to win? I'd say the hardest one to win is the UK Open. The hardest tournament in the world to win.
Do I agree? I don't think I do. I don't think I do. Just on the basis that, is it possible to do well in it without playing the best players? Yes, it is. We've seen that in the past where people have snuck through, keep getting it's a bit like the FA Cup, isn't it? You can get a decent draw each round and you sneak through, and the other guy who's come through has beat Littler, you know, Humphreys, Price, Wright, Van Gerwen, he's had them all, and you're playing. That's my only feeling on that.
However, statistics show us there's not a lot of difference between those players outside the top sort of six and everybody else.
Yeah.
Difference. But not only that, what makes it so hard? So 2017, I think it was, I played in the afternoon. Session was running late. The draw was being done. And by the time the draw had been completed, it was 6:15. The broadcast started at 7:00. You could be playing in 45 minutes. You could be playing in 4 hours and 45 minutes. You do not know. So do you go and start practicing because you might be on in 45 minutes? Or do you wait? Because if you start practicing now, you're not on for 4 hours. You've now got 4 hours. So managing that after you've already played two games in the afternoon. And then there was times where, you know, I'd be last on and you're getting back to the hotel 1:00, 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And actually, then you look at the schedule and you go, oh, great. I'm first on at 12:00. So now I've got to be up for breakfast at 6:00, 7:00. To get myself ready to be at the venue for 9 to start the preparations. So you don't
get that question for you. That's a good question for you, Matt. If you could choose when you were playing, would you rather play at 12:00, 4:00, or 8:00? Well, most people say evening. Most dart players I speak, I'm much better at night, much better at night. I was better mid-afternoon. That was my kind of peak. What about you?
I think the question's quite tricky to answer, because I think if you was to pick a time slot, I'd like late afternoon, early evening. But if you're asking in the context of a tournament, the thing that you don't also think about is when you're on, it is dictated to you by other factors. So you've got to try and read the room. So if you're last on, you got three games before you. They might be quick, they might be short. You've got to keep track of it. You don't know when you're on. You've got to be aware. You've got to be alert. You've got to be ready. And you've got to be ready for a window of 45 minutes. You're not getting ready for 7:00. You're getting ready for a window of a rough estimate of time that you think you're on. Now, here's the other thing as well. Right, so someone gets to two sets. So let's say it's World Championship. As soon as you get to the point where there's one set to go, for anybody, you get taken to a holding area. So someone goes 2-0 up, right? You guys, you're on next, you need to go down to the holding room. So they take you down there, there's practice boards down there, you start getting ready. Then it comes back and it's 2-2. Then it goes to a tiebreaker, and I'm still in this room, like waiting to get ready. Then someone, it's a 9-darter. Right, now we need some So now we've got to put some production in. Is it a nine darter? They're going to go to the studio. They're going to interview the player that's done it. There's going to be a delay. So actually, I've been there for about an hour now, waiting to get ready. But what happens if that happens a couple of times that evening? So a big zap, we've got to go production. We've got to put some production in. And then you just get getting pumped back. So actually, your 45-minute window you thought you're getting ready for now stretches to an hour and 15. So there's a lot of other things you've got to consider like that when you're working on broadcast that, you know, makes it tricky. Like, so ideally, in broadcast, you want to be sort of first on because you know 10 minutes production, I'm on.
Yeah, and I guess in those situations, Matt, it really is a case of whoever handles it the better, doesn't it? You know, we've seen that a lot where players come out and they take two, three, four legs to even look like they're ready. And it's too late, especially in the Premier League. It's too late.
I like that. Yeah. I like what you just said there. It's who handles it better. What I hate is when there's something wrong and you go to a venue and it's cold and you go, oh, it's really cold. You go, but it's the same for everyone. Yeah, it is. But he's got arthritis, and arthritis triggers in cold. So it's not the same for him no more, is it? Because actually, or you get those different sort of reactions. Like, just because it's the same for everyone doesn't mean everyone deals with things the same. It's that old analogy, isn't it? Climb the tree, and you got a fish, you got a monkey, you got a crocodile. Yeah. And it's like, well, it's the same for everyone. All you got to do is climb the tree. You know, and it's not the same for everyone. Everyone deals with things in different ways. Some people like it hot, some people like it cold. Some people like to play in long sleeves. Some like it in short sleeves. If that wasn't a factor, then there wouldn't be things. If playing conditions wouldn't be a conversation. If it's the same for everyone, be an argument, which you tend to find is normally the argument when something's bloody wrong, and they're just.
That's a good question. Okay for everybody. Good question for you then, Matt. Do you want the venue too hot or too cold? Which was your preference? Now I know you don't want either. But if you know what could you deal with the best?
So the answer really is, anytime you're aware of the temperature, it's wrong.
Yeah,
and you should. Temperature is one of the things you should never notice. You don't ever go through the world and go, oh, this is a nice temperature today, isn't it? It's always sure it's a bit warm or oh, it's a bit cold today. So ideally, temperature should never be something you notice.
I always thought that hot was better than cold for me. Cold, my hands, I just couldn't. Even with a hand warmer, I just struggled. But if it was too hot, I could go and cool myself down, get ready to play. But I couldn't stand the cold.
Both have issues. Like cold, when it's hot, it's harder to cool yourself down. When it's cold, it's harder to feel or release the dart. But do you know what, Andy? It don't really matter because same for everyone.
Very good. Very good. I like that. I've got one more. No, I'm jumping in. I've got one more and then I'm going to shut up for the next half an hour. And
One
thing that I've wanted to ask you all week, right? I've been thinking about that and you've on the spot on it. I want the top three, in your opinion, best throwing actions ever.
For three different varieties or reasons, I would go Beaton, Barneveld, Ian White. Quite like the Ian White throw.
Oh, he was my reserve Ian White. I've gone John Lowe, MVG, Mike Dedeker. So we picked completely different players there. But play along at home, I'm sure people are going to go Taylor.
Sounds like a game.
He's nowhere near mine. But But for me, number one, give me your number one. Number one's John Lowe for me. I would give anything to have his throw. Who's your number one?
I'd probably go Barney.
He was smooth, wasn't he, Barney? He was smooth.
And the thing is, there's not many tall dart players. Barney's tall. You might not realise it, but like, I mean, yeah. I have to look up at him. Like, he's tall.
You look at everybody, Matt. You look up at everybody.
For him to throw darts, he has to adjust his throw, and he is quite loopy. And he puts a bit of air on the dart, and that's because it needs to drop. And and if you watch it from behind and you watch the dart fly from Barneveld, it's pretty, it's adjusted nicely. Yeah.
Okay. So, Barney, and John Lowe.
Game number one.
Game time. I'm ready.
And do you know what game we're going to play? We're going to play Wiki Wiki Darts.
Oh, we played that last week. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can play it again. I've got three players for you.
I was really good at it, wasn't I? Yeah, I was brilliant at it, yeah.
So up first, he was the runner-up of the World Match Play back in 2003. Got to the quarterfinal of the World Grand Prix in 2005. He was the runner-up twice at the Las Vegas Desert Classic, 2004 and 2005. He's played in the Premier League, and he is a semi-finalist on the World Championship in 04, 5, 6, and 8. Never did well at the UK Open, though. Last 16 was his best in 2004.
Colin Lloyd.
No.
Oh, I thought I had it then, Matt. I really thought I had it then.
So four PDC World Championship finals, the last in 2008. Runner-up of the John World Match. No. John Parts won the World Championship. You are terrible at this game.
Yeah, but you said finalist. You didn't say whether they won the final. Oh, semi-finalist. Four semi-finalists. 2003, that's what's got me. 22 years ago.
That was the World Match Play.
Harrington?
He won the World Match Play twice. It is Wayne Mardle.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, let's go with the next one then.
Yeah, I'm proving to be really good at this game. Go on.
So this doesn't have a lot of things, so I'll chuck some extras in.
It's Lou Lillard.
Four-time Challenge Tour winner.
Oh, come on.
Won 7 WDF titles. Played in the PDC World Championship best run last 32 in 2018. UK Open 2015, last 16. Three times in the Grand Slam of Darts, European Championships. Best TV performance in the PDC came in the Players' Championship Finals. That was the quarterfinal in 2017, but did reach two semifinals of the Lakeside. 2011 and 2014, those Lakeside semifinals.
Wow. Oh. Oh, no. Oh, I thought I had it then. So I'm trying to think of players that have done both, and there isn't that many that have done both. So Richie Burnett came to mind, but it isn't Richie Burnett because you said semi-finals.
Yeah,
exactly. So who only made the semis of the WDF, but he also... Did he win anything on the PDC, did you say?
Four challenge tours.
Challenge tours.
Semi-final on the Pro Tour was his best. That was in 2017. Beat Andy Jenkins, so Joe Cumbie, Joe Myrna, Dave Chisnell. I mean,
this is a brilliant question because it's somebody that's done the WDF, has done the challenge tour, and has been on the PDC tour. I mean, that alone, there can't be many people that have done that. There's plenty that have done WDF and PDC, but not many that have done challenge as well. And it's somebody relatively... What year was the semis of the WDF?
2011 and 2014 lost to Dean Winstanley and Alan Norris. So 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15 played in the BDO World Championships. And then 2016, 18, 19 and 20 played in the PDC World Championships.
And it's not Colin Osborne because you did him last week. You've got me with this one, Matt, honestly. I bet somebody's screaming at the podcast now going, I've got it. Who is it?
I just nearly shut the screen off then. Oh, okay. Are you ready?
Yep.
Jan Dekker.
Oh, no. No. Oh, I'm never going to live that down. I am never going to live that down. Those that have been watching and listening to the podcast since the beginning know the pain that I'm going through right now, and they know why. Jan, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. You can have your coat back. I'm so sorry, mate.
I've got one more for you.
Oh, great. Because
I think this is one you're not going to get.
Is it won the World Championship 16 times? I can do that one, Matt. Like, make it easier.
Okay. A three-time Pro Tour winner. Also won a development tour. Also won a challenge tour. Also won multiple WDF titles. Was a world top 16 player in 2016. Was a world top 32 in 2015. Best TV run came a quarter final in the World Grand Prix and the Players' Championship Finals. Played in them all. Last 16 of the World Championship on four occasions, 15, 16, 17, and 19. Never won a game at the World Match Play, though.
How can he have done the WDF and the Development Tour and the Challenge Tour? Unless he did
the WDF. Being in the top 16.
14 or something.
And being in the top 16.
Of what?
The world.
Ranked in the top 16 in the world?
Yeah.
PDC?
Yeah. Cogs are turning.
They really are. I'm trying to think. Klassen?
No. To be honest with you, I don't think you're going to get it. And do you know what? I don't think a lot of our viewers will, and they'll forget that you forget these people exist. Three-time Pro Tour winner as well. Shows how quick the cogs turn. Benito van der Pas.
Oh, Benito, Big Ben. Wow, yeah. Was a great player. Just couldn't get his darts sticking the board. Like, literally, the last time we saw him, it was two out of every three on the floor.
Yeah.
Wonder if he's still playing. Benito, are you out there? I think he's shacked up with Jan Dekker. I think they're out sharing an apartment.
Okay, Benito. Do you want another game? I've got another game for you. Right.
Wow, what a good question that was, Matt. I love that question. That was brilliant. I literally could have been thinking all day. I wouldn't have got it.
On my whiteboard, I have wrote down six... Arguably seven, and the seventh may be controversial. So I'll give you the six first. I have wrote down six dart players called Smith. Can you name them?
Yes. I'm going to get my pen and paper out here, and then I can write them down at the same time. So we're going to go Mike.
Yep.
Michael. Yep. Smith.
I've put Mike as well, actually.
Jeff.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that on?
Yeah, it's on.
Well, I should get him. I beat him to get my tour cards. I'm not going to forget him, am I? It's easy to remember the people I beat, Matt. Christ. Andy.
Andy. Poyman.
Ross,
yeah. That's what, four?
That's four. Michael, Jeff.
You've got two more to get.
As it's you, I know there's going to be a stupid one in there. I just know that.
And the controversial one.
Yeah. Adam Smith Neil.
That's the seventh controversial one. Yes. You got the
boom.
Controversial one. Because
I got the hard one.
Does Smith Neil count as a Smith?
Well, it does on my list because I got it.
Yep.
Okay. Suzanne, mission player, Suzanne Smith.
Okay, that's not on my list.
Have you only done male players?
Yes.
So there you go. I've added one that wasn't even on your list. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Why is there not another one jumping at me? There's another obvious one, isn't there? I can see one as well. No, that's not him. It's not a Paul Smith, is that? No.
It's aftershave, isn't it?
It's a brand, isn't it? A clothes brand, I think. Oh, I can't believe I've only got 5 of 7. Another Smith. Are they modern day players as well?
One, yeah.
No. Can't keep okay. our listeners waiting.
Okay. One is the guru from Australia, Raymond Smith. Squat finalist.
Oh, Raymond. Yeah.
Super Series winner. And the one you're going to kick yourself with.
Yeah.
Dennis Smith.
Smithy. Dennis Smith. Oh, played him once. He only just finished. We started in 2023. Dennis was a nightmare to play. Absolute nightmare. You remember him? I'm trying to do it on the camera now with the hand movement. Oh, my God. That's a good one. That's really good. I'm kind of happy I got 5 out of 7. I'm happy that I got Adam Smith-Neal. 5 out of 7. And I got a bonus point for getting Suzanne. So, yeah, I'm quite pleased. Anybody at home that got 7, well done to you. Well done to you, because that was not easy.
The do you know what? Like, when I look at the ambience of this office, it looks like I don't think that when it comes on camera, I don't think it does it justice. You'll see when you're here in a few weeks. Like,
oh, I will, because I'm rating it. I'm rating that studio. Those regular viewers that listen to the pod, watch our main channel, that is a video coming up. Andy rates Matt's studio.
And I can tell you now, I know one thing he's going to be harsh on.
And there could be wrestling. I reckon there could be wrestling after I give my score. I think you should well try and wrestle me to the ground. But the ambience looks very good. But unfortunately, ambience isn't a category. I do know you've got a Mission 270, so lighting you're going to be all right, aren't you?
Well, lighting's incredible.
Light in the corner, that light in the corner, every time I see it, it looks like it's on fire. Yeah, that one. Yeah. It's like
exactly. Perfectly static. Perfectly. It's the light of the room and the camera, but it's actually perfectly still.
Right.
It's just the lighting. Yeah. I think lighting will still get 10 out of 10 because you've got the ambience lighting. We've got the house lights, which are, I've got 1, 2, 3. I've got 4 big bright house lights as well. Then I've got my lights up here for like, if I put them on and things, and then I've got a blackout curtain as well. So I've just left it open today because it's quite a nice day. So yeah.
It is a nice day. The sun is shining. Now, I haven't had time this week with comments, Matt, but I did print one off. I don't know when I printed it off. And this is quite a good question for you. So there's no comment of the week or anything like that this week. It probably won't be next week from Cyprus either, but the Jeff Hardy has said, I have a question about a darts topic that I didn't really see talked about very much. Endurance. When I take part in a bigger local darts tournament, I usually start with a 65 to 70 average. But on many occasions, I would struggle to keep that level during the tournament that would take place for 7+ hours. Any tips would be great as to how I sustain it throughout the day. Love the podcast. Over to you, Matt. I've got my take on it, but over to you. How does somebody maintain that for 7 hours?
So what you're saying and the question you're asking really is saying that the UK Open's the hardest one to win because it's about the endurance and your performance is going to drop as it goes, aren't you? That's because you've got to maintain that over a long period of time with big peaks to take on the world's best players. Because you've got to play
round robin tournament
Friday afternoon, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, Sunday morning, afternoon and night.
It's only 3 games. I never know. I didn't make it past the first round. So, right. Imagine the guy. I'm thinking the guy's playing a round robin tournament. There's lots of them about now. So he's got 5 games. Then he's got the knockout stage. Then another knockout stage. He's playing all day. He might only win a tenner at the end of the day. It doesn't matter. He's playing all day. He's done his practice. He plays his first game. He averages 70. He's absolutely on it. Feel great. Plays his second game. Good. But an hour later, he's playing and his levels are dropping. Now, I would say this is food and drink related, personally. But how would you approach that if you were going to a round robin event? You knew you were going to be there all day. Would you take some protein bars, or what would you do?
It is a hard one. It's a hard one because a lot of the tournaments traditionally like that. The idea is to not fully stop because the issue comes with stop start. I stop, right, I'm on it again. Stop, I'm on it again. Stop. And it's trying to, if you look at like a graph, you've got these peaks. And then if you're going to go, right, I want to be up here for my game. And then, whoop, I'm going to sit down for a bit. Oh, game time, back up. Whoop, whoop. And it's that real high and low trying to manage that. And the idea is to not dip it off as far. So certainly when I was on the Pro Tour, we win the first game. Me and Ryan, Ryan still does this now, by the way, Ryan Sell, straight to the practice board, casual, just ticking out, just throwing darts, having a chat, loose, but still semi-engaged, just ticking over. Because if you go sit down, muscles shrink, tiredness is good. Then you get back up and it's like, right, here we go again. And it's like that. Think about this when you're at work, you know, and you go for your lunch break, you sit down for your lunch. At the end of your lunch break, it's like, best get back to it then. And the first 20 minutes, you're sluggish. You're not as good as you was before your lunch break. It's the same sort of thing here. But if you did your lunch break, like we now do, Andy, where we're going to carry on doing our job and eating a sandwich while we're doing it, or we're going to have it in the car while we're on our way to the next bit, you tend to find that you keep the production levels quite high. It doesn't affect you too much. So
I've always thought the Spanish way is the right way. Go to work in the morning, then go and have lunch with your family and a couple of glasses of vino. Then go and have a sleep for a siesta in the afternoon and then come back to work again. I thought that's absolutely brilliant. That suited me down to the ground. That, you know, it's like break the day up into two working sections, because you're absolutely right. And we've all done this. And funnily enough, we've got a series, haven't we, on food and fitness coming up. But we've all made this mistake early on. Oh, God, I've been up since I've been practicing. It's now 1 o'clock. I've only played one game. I'm starving. I'm going to have to go and get something to eat, mate. Right, I'm going to go. I'm absolutely starving. I'm going to have a sausage roll and a bacon butty. 20 minutes later.
You like that? I don't want to play anymore. I just want to sit in a chair.
No, mate, you're on in 10 minutes.
Oh, God.
And you cannot get yourself back. You cannot get yourself back. So,
and that's the food you get. You know, you go to these local opens. Mm. A lot of the places don't serve food now, so they hire in Greasy Bertha, who sets up a bacon roll stand outside, and then you go see Big Bertha, and she's like, right, I'll 8 pieces of bacon in there. You want some sauce? Yeah, absolutely. Of course I want some sauce. Yeah. Whack that on there. Yeah. So,
Yeah, so our advice is to just try and stay loose, but maybe not so much practice as just keeping your muscles moving. And I would say, don't fill up.
Grace.
Good advice. Get on the nuts. Nuts is a good one for me. Walnuts and almonds. Give me some of them and a little bit of dark chocolate and I can play all day. I just never got the chance. I was always out by lunchtime. Anyway, anything else for me this week, Matthew, before I jet off?
No, looking forward to seeing the back of you.
Yeah. Well, maybe when we do the podcast from Cyprus, I'll do it like this. And I'll talk this way. What do you think? Would that be better?
It's an improvement.
I thought you'd say that. Okay. Great to see you as always. Don't forget to catch us every week. Make sure you're subscribed. Still thousands of you listening every week not subscribed. Get subscribed. We'll catch you again, same place, same time next week.